That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 84 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 22nd of April, 2022. I'm Conal O'Moran. As always, we try to mix it up on the podcast, so this week we'll be bringing you the A to Z of selling online, and today's e-commerce expert also happens to be a British Airways pilot. As you do. We never do ordinary on That Great Business Show. So whether you are a butcher, baker, or candlestick maker, we'll explain why and how you should be selling online. Indeed, if you're unemployed or a student looking for a side hustle and haven't started your business yet, you'll need to hear what our expert has to say and how you could be in business for just €29. And that's coming up in a minute. But first, a pretty random but interesting thing that I came across whilst preparing for this week's podcast. There is a crowdsourcing platform called HeroX or Herox, HeroX.com. No, I hadn't ever heard of it either. It itself is fascinating. Have a look at HeroX.com. But what actually drew my attention to it was that the US's National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health has teamed up with HeroX.com. They're looking for solutions that can have a positive impact on large numbers of people through innovations in technology, design, logistics, communications, or user training for what we now know post-COVID as PPE, personal protective equipment. So if you're a fireman, a nurse, defense forces person, or just someone who thinks about these things, and I know many of you do, there's a modest prize fund available for your brilliant ideas. But I also assume that winning ideas could become winning businesses. And I did check on your behalf. Yes, you can apply from Ireland. And as regular listeners know, if you then need a US presence, our good friends at the Ireland Connecticut Business Council are here to help. They'll have you set up ready for business in the US in jig time. Winning ideas will deliver improved fit and user comfort without compromising safety, job performance, or the dignity of a worker's experience, according to the website. It's well worth having a look at it. Check it out again, HeroX, as in the letter X.com. This little tip and all of our other great little insights are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil.
De Facto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
My next guest, my first guest, my only guest today is part-time, sometimes British Airways pilot Patrick McCarthy, who's not here to talk about anything to do with flying, but is here because his other business, the DigiFly Agency, is expert on Shopify. And though I'm sure their competitors might disagree, many hundreds of thousands of businesses worldwide say that Shopify is one of the most user-friendly e-commerce builders to help beginners and small business owners set up and run their online store for the first time. And let there be no confusion, Shopify is a specialized e-commerce platform, whilst the other one, which is Amazon, is an online marketplace. So they're not anything alike. Shopify gives you the tools to build your very own online store, while Amazon lets you sell through its marketplace alongside other online sellers. Patrick McCarthy, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Conal. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. You are a British Airways pilot. How come you are also running the DigiFly agency?
I am. Well, I've always had a background in web design all the while I was have been a pilot for the last 20-odd years, and always had a bit of a side hustle in that side of things, and did some work for some clients, generally people that I knew, and got referred a few people here and there. And it was just a kind of a small-time gig. Then I actually ended up starting up my own e-commerce store on Shopify itself. Started one, it failed. Started another one that failed as well. And then started one that actually became quite successful, ran it for about 15 months, and then subsequently sold it. And then out of that was born a kind of a rebrand of the work I'd been doing in web design and shifted very much into e-commerce and specifically Shopify. And all the while, this was still quite the side hustle to my flying career. Now it's probably equal, you know, or the flying career is nearly a bit of a side hustle to the agency work. So it's it's been a fascinating journey for me, and now that I have a team behind me as well to support the growth of our agency, yeah, it's been great. But that's where it's come from.
You are not the only pilot that I've come across who does have a side hustle. Is it something to do with being bored in the sky, or
I don't know. I know a lot of pilots who have different enterprises going on, side hustles here and there. I mean, as a long haul pilot, I'm a long haul pilot, so we do get a lot of spare time, be it at home or when we're down route in destinations far away, and we get time, and you know, we might get a 2-3 days in a hotel somewhere. And once you've done all the touristy parts of a place that you've been to, a couple of times, you tend to start to look at other things and what can you do. So yeah, that's why a lot of pilots tend to then start looking at potentially other business, and especially ones that you can run remotely or online would be very attractive to someone who has that time on their hands.
You are flying very shortly to Hong Kong. What length of time in the air are you?
That is correct. Yeah, I'm going to Hong Kong in a couple of weeks. That is about a 12 and a half hour flight.
So during those 12 and a half hours, tell the truth. You're up there doing your DigiFly work.
Not doing my DigiFly work. No, I'm not. I don't quite have the laptop out I'm working away because, there is still work to do while we are flying, albeit on a long 12 and a half hour flight. There are periods in the middle of that where there, you know, the workload is quite low, and we do get the opportunity to maybe, read a book or look at some notes and things like that. But, no, I wouldn't quite be tapping away on the laptop while up there.
How can I put it nicely? As a not too happy flyer, I'm delighted to hear that the pilot is actually looking at the window to make sure nothing untowards happens. While we are on that subject, we're going to move away from it because I want to know about who should get involved in e-commerce. I mean, it's a massive, massive business, and the dark cloud of COVID was a silver lining for you and for e-commerce. It is an continues to be growing like nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're selling anything, then, selling it online these days is probably a if you're not already, is somewhere that you need to look. As you said, out of COVID, it's accelerated the world of e-commerce quite significantly, well into personally, I'd say 5 or 6 years into the future in terms of consumer confidence. You would have had a lot of consumers who wouldn't have been confident shopping online, putting their credit card details in. And out of COVID, they've kind of been forced to a little bit but by doing so have gained that confidence in shopping online. And then also for the retailers themselves, for those retailers that only had brick and mortar stores, physical stores, that again were forced to go online because their stores were closed down throughout COVID. So, from those two angles, we've seen an acceleration in e-commerce and now if because of that consumer confidence, if you're looking to sell anything, if you're selling it physically in a brick and mortar store, but there, I think you'd be foolish not to consider the online option as well. And there's a lot of stores that only have online as a sales channel, and they don't have a physical presence, and they do very good business.
And living as we do on our tiny little island, it makes an awful lot of sense to look beyond the island, 5 million within the Republic, 7 or is it 8 billion beyond the Republic. Mm-hmm. It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
100%, yeah. And, obviously, as you say, selling in your local geographic area, especially your own country, is probably an easier first step, but then you can look at internationalizing your business. And that's where, I know we'll talk about Shopify, but that's one of the things that Shopify allows retailers to do quite easily. And it has multi-currency and multi-language functionality that allows you to internationalize your business and ship your products all over the world.
What works and what doesn't? You mentioned that you had two duds. Do you want to talk about them? I'm your therapist.
Oh, thank you very much. The two does. Well, to be honest, you know, I did. I when I set up a Shopify store, and this is, you know, this is about 6 or 7 years ago. It was a dropshipping model, which, you know, is a lot of people tend to try and start an e-commerce business that way.
Not everybody is familiar with that term. What does that mean?
The idea behind dropshipping is that you don't hold the inventory, you don't hold the stock. Somebody places an order through your website and you subsequently place that order with the supplier, and the supplier sends the product directly to the consumer. You almost act like a broker, but you create the relationship with the supplier so the customer doesn't have to. You do all the marketing of the product. And then it just gets shipped directly. So there's advantages and disadvantages to it. The advantages are you don't have to hold any stock, and you don't have to put upfront capital into setting up an e-commerce business by having to buy that stock. But the downside is that you, depending on where your supplier is, and a lot of these dropshipping models use Chinese suppliers, that if you're shipping to the US or Europe, then you're looking at long delivery times.
How long is long?
You know, it could be anywhere between the quickest I've seen it happen is a week, which is not too bad. But, you know, it can go up to 4 or 5 and even 6 weeks. And that, you know, can is not. And especially these days when, you know, you mentioned Amazon as well, when they're doing next day delivery and even same day delivery in some places in the US, 6 week wait is not exactly the best thing. But yeah, that is essentially the drop shipping model. I started up two of those stores. One was in kind of travel equipment. One was hiking equipment. They were both kind of related to each other. But, you know, I just tested these two markets. They're markets that are quite saturated. I wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything different about them.
Why did you choose those?
I almost kind of like sticking a pin on a map, you know, not quite. I just looked at different markets. I looked at where things might be working and where they might not. And I found some products that I thought might work from a supplier in China, as I mentioned, and tested it with some marketing, some advertising, and there was some sales. You know, don't get me wrong, you know, people did buy the products, but it didn't look like it was getting any traction, and it didn't look like it was going to be profitable. So moved then into another niche, which was, arts and crafts supplies.
And was there a reason why you chose arts and crafts?
No, I came across a few sites that looked like they had some good traction and good traffic. And again, it was just a testing. You know, as I said, I tested a few different ones, and it's like throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. So, and this one stuck, and it started gaining traction quite quickly and became profitable. Managed to just increase the ad spend, and that increased the traffic, increased the sales, and then brought in revenue to increase and like a bit like a snowball effect, was able to generate revenue to scale up the business. What I did then was, even though it was still always a drop shipping model, but instead of drop shipping directly from China, I bulk purchased products and shipped them to a warehouse in the US. And I was able to fulfill directly from most of the consumers that I was selling to were US based.
But you still have now, you've put an extra layer into it, because you have to have a relationship with your distributor, warehouse distributor.
Correct.
In the US.
Correct. Now, there's some great third-party logistic companies in the US who are all set up. They'll plug directly into your Shopify store. They're plugged into all the carriers in the US, and they make it pretty seamless. So yeah, it makes it for an easy setup, really. But yeah, look, that grew, and then I was able to get it to a point where I sold the business, because it wasn't, you know, I enjoyed doing it, but it wasn't necessarily a product line that I was passionate about. So
your knitting needles, you were not passionate about.
No, I was never big into knitting for whatever reason. I don't know why.
So from this, you have learned. So now you're effectively an advisor as well as an implementer of Shopify to many big named companies. Now, what works? What doesn't work? We know, obviously, that hiking boots don't work, but that may be for reasons nothing to do with hiking. Maybe something to do with you.
Yeah, no, well, hiking boots didn't work for me. There's lots of, and it's really about, you know, if you're starting a new business in e-commerce, it's very much, there's a lot of trial and error. There can be a lot of trial and error, but if you don't know what products, you know, we were talking off air about what products might not or might not work. And we're talking, you know, groceries are probably a prime example in terms of delivery time. You know, unless you've got a Tesco model and you can do home delivery from a distribution center close to people's houses, then, you know, but there's not a lot out there that you can't sell online and ship. Obviously, there's things like, you know, if products get quite big, like furniture and things like that, it makes it more challenging. So the things that tend to work are, from an online perspective, obviously, well, I'm going to say clothes, apparel, but then obviously that comes with its downsides as well, because they can see a lot of returns when people buy clothes that they try them on, they don't fit, and then they have to send them back. But yeah, I mean, we've got, you know, just thinking about our own client base, you know, we've got clients in the tea and coffee industry, the gifts and homewares, the vinyl records industry, and they all sell exceptionally well.
Talk to me about the vinyl records, because because it stands out. Somebody's buying vinyl records somewhere and effectively distributing them through Shopify. Is that it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so they our clients that one is Clatter Records, a well-known Irish label, but we sell the records and the CDs are and they get distributed through the Clatter Records shop in Temple Bar. Then we have another one called the Record Hub, and they distribute via warehouse based in Ireland here, and that is primarily all vinyl records. And yeah, then it's the audience is primarily an Irish market, but also, you know, shipping to the UK and the US and all over the world as well.
We started off when I was with my introduction there saying €29 is your entry cost. Mm. That's nice and low.
It is. Yeah. I mean, Shopify is a platform, and, you know, it's the only platform that we work with now. And there's obviously other platforms out there. The typical ones you might hear about are Magento and WooCommerce and WordPress, you know, Wix and Squarespace and things like that. But Shopify sits in a very good place in terms of an offering for small businesses, medium-sized businesses, but also large enterprise, multinational businesses as well use Shopify. But as you say, the €29 entry fee is very low. So it allows pretty much anyone to go and set up a Shopify store, get your product images, your descriptions, put them up there. You could have a Shopify store running up and running within half a day, and be paying €29 a month. Now, there's obviously lots of other things to make it successful, but to get it up and running.
So talk to me about you're up and running half a day, which sounds phenomenal. Mm. Like, you go back one step, which is you've obviously got to work out what you want to sell. I mean, that's a given.
100%. Yeah, no, I mean, you absolutely do what
is there
you want to figure out.
Is there any which way on the global internet that will tell you, do you know what, this niche market is not served? Is there anybody doing that work?
Product research is a massive industry. And, you know, there's lots of ways to go about it. I mean, one simple way is to look at Google Trends. And, you know, you can go onto a Google Trends website and put in a search term, and it'll tell you if a particular product line is starting to trend, skateboarding, skates, anything, you know, footballs, whatever, and it'll tell you whether something is starting to become trendy or not. And you can sometimes hop on a trend that way. I mean, you know, if you really wanted to go into the product research style, I mean, there's hundreds, probably thousands of YouTube videos of people telling you of all the nuts and bolts of how to go down the product research line. You know, there's ways to research on Amazon to see how well certain products are selling on Amazon and go, well, okay, if that product is selling well, maybe there's an opportunity for me to do something similar, put a little tweak on it, make it a little bit better, and then create my own Shopify store and sell it outside of the Amazon marketplace direct to consumers.
Tweaks. What
what's a tweak?
Well, I suppose let's start with what is a tweak, but also tell me what is a good tweak.
You know, I'm not where our expertise lies is actually taking the Shopify store that of a client that already has their products and making the store a seamless experience for the customer. From the product perspective, how you would tweak a product that you see is selling well to make it better. I mean, it could be a rucksack that you put another functionality on. It might be, you know, make it waterproof or put some charging ability for your phone or something like that. You know, I'm just making stuff up here, but that is potentially the kind of the process that you would go through when you're looking at product research in terms of how you could either create a product or take a product that is already doing well and find a supplier, and then that you can white label that product. You can put your own branding on that product, and then sell it, ship it in, and start selling. But a lot of it is testing as well. You know, there's no guarantee that a product is going to work. You'll see a lot of products doing, and you mentioned crowdsourcing earlier on, but like a Kickstarter campaign. You often see innovative products coming through is on these Kickstarter campaigns. And that's where, you know, because they can go through a crowdsourcing campaign, they can mitigate a lot of the risk in creating a new product because they get the funding in the first place. But yeah, so I mean, you know, from a general product resourcing perspective, it is a bit of a minefield. But as I say, you know, there's probably lots of resources out there that you can find, especially on the likes of YouTube.
Make one small switch. Switching from shaving foam to all-natural De Facto shaving oil will give you the smoothest, softest shave ever. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto helps stop 20 million non-recyclable shaving foam cans go to landfills every year. Switching from shaving oil to De Facto will save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
When you were looking for your supplier, like, do you just phone up, you know, Jack Smith in China?
And again, you know, this is a really interesting one. I mean, typically, coming back to the drop shipping element, when you set up a drop shipping store, on Shopify, or at least when a lot of people set up a dropship store, they'll start with a website called AliExpress, which is, some people might be familiar with Alibaba, which is a Chinese website where you can find suppliers and you can buy, 1,000 widgets or 2,000 whatevers. But they generally have a minimum order quantity. AliExpress is the express version of that website. You're contacting the same suppliers, but you can buy single units of a particular product. At a slightly higher price, but still a lot cheaper than you would pay for it in the US or Europe. And that's how that dropshipping model tends to start out. I mean, what we did was we started with that, but then quickly found a supplier and made relationships with about two or three suppliers, but then quite a good relationship with one supplier, and got them to white label, to put our branding on products. Had samples sent over to make sure that they were good quality, and then had those shipped to the US. But again, it's, do you phone up a supplier? Almost. You do.
Your business that you're running was teeny, correct?
Yes. Yeah. No, it was small.
So in terms of having, you said, a good relationship with a supplier, does he care? Does she care about you at all? And how can you have confidence that they may send you over beautiful samples?
Well, it was small, but, you know, we're still ordering, I think, you know, over the lifespan of the 12 to 15 months through one supplier, we ordered about 200,000 euros worth of goods.
I was thinking about a couple hundred euros or something.
No. So we did make reasonable sized orders. There are lots of companies out there who will help you find Chinese suppliers if that's the road you want to go down as well.
But that's another layer of cost, I presume.
It is another, yeah, absolutely. It's another layer of cost that if you're on a limited budget, it's probably one that you wouldn't want to go down straight away.
So just imagine my students sitting in their bedsit, Michael or Mary, and they want a side hustle. And where would they start? Like, you're up the ladder a good deal that you can make contact with suppliers. They're not going to be able to pick up the phone to some guy down in Wuhan looking for a handful of, you know, woolly jumpers or something.
Yeah, well, there is a certain element to just picking up the phone. And as I said, you know, looking at somewhere like Alibaba or AliExpress, where all these, it's a marketplace for suppliers in China. And you can reach out, and they're all rated. You know, they all get rated in terms of quality and the quality of service, quality of product. And you can reach out to them. And, you know, that most of them have good English that you can speak to. But, you know, this is me talking about China specifically. There's obviously lots of other countries in the world that will supply products as well. You know, another business that I set up, which I didn't mention, was a sock business. Socks. Yeah.
As in socks.
So, yeah. Myself and a friend set that up around the same time as well. We designed our own socks, got them manufactured in Turkey. So, you know, we used a supplier in Turkey. Now, luckily my business partner at the time had a contact with a supplier in Turkey. So we had that in, and that was part of the reason we were able to kind of give that business a go. And you know, that did okay, but it never became wildly profitable, so we kind of let it go after a bit of time. We ended up having to change supplier in Turkey, and the quality kind of went downhill, so we just put a pin in it. But yeah, like, where do you go looking for a supplier? It's a tough question. It's a tough question to answer, and it's partly the reason why I'm not necessarily in the e-commerce game now. I'm more in the agency side helping retailers. So look, if somebody didn't have a product line, where would they go to start? I would say doing online research is, you know, Google is very much your friend. There's a lot of nonsense out there, and you have to have a good filter and sift through a lot of the debris, but there are some gems in the world of Google and the world of YouTube.
And speaking of gems, what little gems have you come across? Not for you, but, and you don't have to name the names, but people are in their niches that people have found that they are making a tidy little living out of.
Yeah, it's you know, it's an interesting one. I mean, there's just thinking about our you know, our own client base, but in terms of the different areas, I mean, the clothing can work quite well. If you can mitigate the return process, there's great tools online now in order to help people find out exactly what size they want, and they can almost visualize the clothes on them, which mitigate that return process, and that they can be really successful if they're run properly.
Are you telling me that there's a very healthy margin in that business?
There can be. Yeah, there can be, absolutely. You know, it's and especially if you're in the higher end fashion lines as well, the margins tend to increase. But and then, you know, across other home and gift wares, you know, we've a couple of clients in the tea and coffee sector as well, and you know, coffee it's no secret that there's good margins in selling coffee as well. But
And would those coffee sellers sell internationally, or is it primarily into Ireland?
Well, I mean, one of our clients is Bewley's, so I mean,
okay, that's a well-known name.
They do sell worldwide, and again, born out of COVID, I mean, Bewley's would be very well known as a business to business supplier. You typically see their branding in cafes and restaurants and hotels, and you know, just around the kind of COVID time, they shifted into the direct to consumer market more so than they have been doing. So, but yeah, very much so across not just in Ireland, but also across the UK, Europe, and the US.
So we start at the base level, which is €29 per month on Shopify. Now, that is really the entry level. What does it cost after that per month, per annum, to actually really promote a business?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good question. I mean, the €29 is your base. I mean, all that will do is set you up with a website, and
which is not bad.
It's, you know, it's not bad. You know, you'll have your website. You can send people the link to the website. You'll probably need to buy, you know, a .com as well, a domain name or a .ie. And, you know, they're quite cheap as well. And then you just connect them up. And then after that, you know.
So just on that, have you got any views on domain names as in Digifly, like
what to use? Well, yeah. I mean, the .coms have been around for so long that it's very difficult to get a decent .com name that isn't already taken or that somebody's going to sell.
When you say decent, it only means it's decent because it means something to you or to in English maybe. But if you just call it, I don't know.
Oh yeah, you can make up
hair.
Yeah, you can make up a name completely. But it also, you know, there has to be probably a little bit of thought put into that when you're coming up with a brand name that, you know, you generally want your .com to match your brand name. But again, it doesn't have to be a .com if you are going to be focusing on the Irish market, at .ie is perfectly fine. You know, there are other options out there as well aside from .com. There's like .co, and there's loads of
dot.
So yeah, there's plenty. Sporting, there's plenty, but but yeah. So you know, the .coms are probably the best known and the easiest for people to remember to type into a web address. But
I think our pals down in Carlow, Black Knight, I don't know how they use them.
Yes, yeah,
but
yeah.
But they'll
yeah.
give you a .com for 12 or 15 quid or something.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
That it's not going to break the bank. So where is the rest of the spend?
Where is the rest? So that's, you know, as I said, you know, that'll get you the website. That'll get you. And then, you know, as long as you have a bit of tech savvy, you can actually probably set that up yourself, write in the descriptions, put in your product images,
takes your product images? Do you sit there?
Well, again, you know, this is just depends. You can obviously get them professionally photographed or you
is it
can...
worth it?
I think it is. I think because most people, we've worked with clients in the past where they've had good sites. The sites have been nicely designed, but the product images have been very poor. And that is your biggest selling point of your product. People are going to look at what the product looks like. And if the imagery is poor, then it's going to be hard to sell that product. So we always recommend that the product images are top notch. You can, you know, photograph your own products quite easily. You can get, you know, if the products aren't that big, you can get white boxes off Amazon. They're only about 20 or 30 quid. You know, if you've got a decent iPhone these days, it'll take a very good quality photo. So, you know, the tools are at our disposal these days to get good quality photographs of your products and get them onto the site. But so yeah, I mean, from that perspective, you can be pretty cost effective.
And here's my little hack for you on that one. Go down to any of the creative courses in any of our third level institutions, and the young people there will take some very fine photographs for the price of a few pints.
Yeah, a few cups of coffee, I was going to say. Yeah, there you go. So, you know, there's ways and means of keeping your budget quite tight to set up the store. Now,
so next level, you've got your images.
You've got your images. You've put in your product descriptions. As long as you can write a few sentences together. Obviously, there's things to think about like branding and logo, and you might need to hire a freelancer, a graphic designer to create a logo for you and create a bit of branding and suggest maybe what kinds of fonts you want to use and things like that. And you can do that reasonably cost effective. The likes of Fiverr.com or Upwork.com, where you can hire freelancers to do all this kind of work.
You better mention IndieList. The Irish
and,
one.
And Indie List. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Peter McParland's.
My old boss. Yeah. Lovely guy.
Yeah, certainly. Places like Indie List or Upwork or Fiverr, all those kind of places where you can get freelancers cost effectively to do things like graphic design. Any development that might need to be done can be done quite cost effectively as well. Not that there generally needs to be done on a kind of a base level Shopify store. And that's getting the site up and running. But, you know, as I said, you know, the old adage, if you build it, they will come, doesn't really apply here. And
so I'm going to drop to you yet again. At that stage, is the till ready? We get about people coming now, but is there a payments system involved at that level?
Yeah, there is. And that's one of the great advantages of Shopify is that it comes with its own payment processor, payment processing system. So all you literally need to do when you set up the Shopify account is put in your IBAN number. Where do you want the money to go? And that's it. You obviously need to, you need to put in, if you're a limited company, you need to put in those details. If you're a sole trader, you need to put in those details, or an individual or whatever.
So when you say put in those details,
into the back end of Shopify, so when you set up the account.
And do they then talk to your bank or something like that? Or?
They will take that information, they'll review it. They may ask you to verify your identification. So they might ask for a scan of your passport. They might look for a utility bill just to confirm your address. And once that's all been confirmed, you can start generating revenue, so that when somebody goes to your website and buys something off, goes through the checkout, they'll check out, put the money, put their credit card details in, and then that money gets paid out. It's generally next day with Shopify into your account. Now they take a fee. You know, sorry, the €29 is one thing. They also take a cut on the for the payment processing.
Oh.
So this depends. So it's 2.4% on the €29 month fee, if I can remember correctly.
It's okay, but something around that. Like, it's not going to literally break the bank.
Oh, no, not at all. No. It's 2.something%. And then they step up. They have other levels of, they've got €29, and then they've got €79, and then they've got €299. And as you step up, that fee goes down. So the more you sell, you can then step up to the next level to reduce your transaction fee and mitigate the cost of stepping up. As I say, that's all included within Shopify. So as soon as somebody goes onto your website, they purchase something, that money goes into your bank account. So there's no need to start looking at third-party providers in terms of processing to how you're going to collect your money.
Now, you were selling your hiking boots, but there probably were another, maybe you don't want to be reminded of this, there may have been another 10 or 100,000 people selling hiking boots as well. How do you manage to stand out?
Mm. This is the thing these days, isn't it? It's standing out from the crowd. And as I said, you know, you build the site, you have it there, it's ready to go, your products are on it. But, you know, now you need to start telling people about it. There's many ways and means of doing it from a digital perspective. The typical avenues are paid social media. Social media to begin with, not even paid social media, trying to generate a social media following. If you've got products that are quite visually pleasing, then Instagram tends to work quite well, and building up an organic Instagram following can work well, and using the likes of Instagram influencers. I mean, we did it with the socks. We sent socks to, we found people online who had a reasonably high following, and, you know, just sent them free socks, and they would post the socks for us, you know, wearing the socks in various different areas.
But it's not that simple. I mean, those people presumably get socks from everywhere.
Some do, some don't. It depends. I mean, yeah, and again, there's ways and means of finding the right influencers and finding...
How did you do it?
A bit of trial and error, really. We didn't go down any particular avenue. There's lots of tools and lots of platforms out there where you can find influencers in certain markets with certain following. Don't get me wrong, if once you start getting influencers who have a really high following, they're going to charge to promote your products.
Did you ever buy an influencer?
No, we didn't. We didn't actually pay an influencer. We found influencers with a medium amount of following who are just quite happy to receive free stuff,
including knitting needles.
No, didn't use that. Didn't use influencers for knitting needles. But we certainly use it for the socks, and it worked again to a reasonable degree of success. But that is one. That's one channel, and that is essentially one of the most cost-effective ways to do it, because you're not putting ad spend, you're not having to pay for ads either on social media or on Google. And then you do move into that paid PPC, or pay-per-click as they call it, where you pay Facebook to advertise your products on Facebook and Instagram, or you also look at the likes of Google. They're two very different marketing channels. Facebook and Instagram tend to be more disruptive advertising. So, you know, they're trying to stop you from scrolling by catching your attention on a product that they think you might want, but they don't necessarily know that you want. Now that the targeting, and it's been well publicized how targeting works on the likes of, excuse me, Facebook and Instagram. But you can target quite well in terms of finding your audience and based on what people are into, their age demographic, where they're located.
That's by using Google Analytics or
Facebook. Yeah, by using Facebook audience targeting. You know, anybody who's been using Facebook, you know, Facebook knows probably more about us than we know ourselves in terms of our behaviors online, in terms of our shopping behaviors, what we like, what we don't like. Because every website you visit has a little bit of code not every website, but the majority of websites out there will have a little bit of Facebook code on there. So Facebook knows that you've gone to have a look at that hotel or that destination.
Am I right in saying that's about to disappear? Isn't this one of the
big
changes?
It's getting harder. It's getting harder, and it's you know, Apple brought in a new update to their iOS, which limits the amount of reporting that advertisers can utilize with Facebook. And it does make it harder to advertise and harder to target. But it is there, and it is a channel. And then, you know, it's also getting more expensive because the more and more people advertise on Facebook and Instagram, there's only so much real estate on your Facebook feed when you're scrolling through. So it's actually it's an auction system. So you bid against other advertisers, and that price has been going up incrementally over the years. Likewise with Google, you know, and Google's a very different one in terms of it's very search-based. So, you know, people are going there with intent. They're looking for something specific. They're typing in hiking boots, and that's what they're looking for. And we use that to good effect with some of our clients in terms of not so much with the Google search a little bit. So Google search is when you type in a search query and you see search results there. But the Google shopping is a little bit different, where you type in hiking boots and you see pictures of hiking boots come across the top line with the price and with the link directly to that product page on a retailer's website.
And that is very effective.
And that works really, really effectively. Again, it can depend on the industry, on the type of product, but we found it works quite effectively with our clients. Yeah. And then, you know, as I said, that's becoming more limiting as well. Google are bringing in restrictions. Our restrictions are bringing in that are limiting the way those ads can work. And it's becoming just incrementally more expensive to acquire new customers via paid advertising. That's why kind of influencers are starting to make a little bit of a comeback on because of that. But also, it's becoming far more important to start looking at how you retain customers, how you build your community once you have them in the door.
And I'll come back to retention in a second.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
In terms of the spend, roughly speaking, and I know it's like the length of a piece of string. If we're Michael and Mary, we're in our bedsit, we're selling our hiking boots, and it's costing 29 quid to get onto Shopify. We've spent some money on the photos, etc., etc. Typically, what kind of a spend would be expected per month for that kind of a real, you know, mom and pop, early stage one?
So the way the ads work on Facebook and on Google is that you know, they're not going to work and be profitable, or in most cases, straight out of the gate. You're going to need to have to put a little bit of spend behind them to get the ads running. And then the algorithms that run on the background of the likes of Facebook and Google are quite smart. They are quite clever, and they find out how people are reacting to the ads that you're paying money for. And then they adjust themselves, they optimize themselves over time. Now, you know, what's a typical ad spend? Typically, you're not, you know, for you, if you were just using a testing budget, you'd really be looking at about 15 to 20 euros a day Now that's 20 euros a day, 600 euros a month. So you're not going to get a huge amount of traction under that. And what you're looking for with that spend is that hopefully over the course of a few days, maybe a couple of weeks, that the ads do start to get some traction. They start to become profitable. You get sales out of them. And with those sales, you can then start to incrementally increase the ad budget so that you can scale that up and keep going. Now, you know, it's not just going to be linear. You can't just scale into infinity and expect the performance to be the same. It is going to start tailing off, but it's finding that sweet spot that you can, and it's, you know, that's with one campaign. Then you might try a different campaign. You might try something on Facebook with some different creative and different images. And so there's all sorts of ways and means. But from an ad budget perspective, probably about 20 euros a day.
And I know that it also means time, because
yes,
it just is, it is infinite in terms of time, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 100%. It does take time. And that's why, you know, it can be difficult to market your own products. Especially if you're not familiar with the Google Ads setup or the Facebook Ads Manager or things like that. Now, look, there's lots of, again, if somebody was on a budget, there's lots of resources out there to help you in those areas. But in terms of, yeah, it does take time. And what you're looking for then in terms of a return on ad spend, because that's one of the metrics is ROAS, return on ad spend, is your number one is you're looking to be profitable. And typically you need to be, your ads need to be bringing in about 2.5, 3, even maybe 4 times your ad spend for you to be profitable. Because you obviously have to pay for the cost of the goods. You've got your fixed costs to Shopify and whatever other fixed costs you might have. So they all need to be taken into account.
So if we're working off the base of 600 quid a month, you are hoping to bring in 2.5 grand a month in turnover.
If you times it by 4, yeah, I mean, that's probably what you're looking at. Again, it depends on the type of product you're selling. Some products will have a greater gross margin of profit that people can play with, and some have quite tight margins. So you need a greater return. And, you know, we've seen some really good return on ad spends with some clients, you know, up to 10 and 15 times the ad spend. But then the average tends to be in around, if the ads are performing well, anywhere between 5 and 10.
And was there something exceptional about the ones who broke the mold? Was there, you know?
No, I mean, we're working with one client at the moment who sells fishing equipment, you know, waders and fishing flies and reels and everything. And that's utilizing Google Shopping. And they've seen some really good results with Google Shopping, up to about 10 times their ad spend. Yeah,
that's all right. Mm. Now, I know you're mad keen to talk to me about client retention. It's something that is your bee in your bonnet at the moment.
That's not a bee, no. Well, it's not a bee in the bonnet, but it's certainly an area that we're focusing on with our clients now, because as I mentioned earlier on, it is becoming more expensive to acquire new customers and bring them in the door. The ads are getting more expensive, and it's always been, you know, some retailers just focus on that area and sometimes forget about what to do with their customers after they've arrived. And not even their customers, but the people who have come in just browsing and have left. And you know, on average, 97-98% of people who visit an e-commerce store don't go on and buy something. They just they go somewhere else because it's so easy. We get distracted so easily these days. It's not like walking into a physical store where the conversion rate is far higher. So looking after those, trying to communicate with those people. That's why we typically quite often see the pop-up on an e-commerce store, you know, give us your email address and we'll give you 10% off your first purchase. That's quite a common thing to see these days.
Very annoying.
It can be very annoying. And I think people are starting to get, as you say, annoyed by that or used to that, and they don't. But, you know, if you're offering 10% off your first purchase, it's an incentive that will allow people to, look, I'll give you the email address.
But once you have the email address, you now have to put that into a Soho or a HubSpot or does Shopify do that as well?
Shopify does have, they've got Shopify email, and not to rain too much on Shopify, but it's, you know, there are, for us, we've found with our clients, there are some better tools than what Shopify's internal email system will do. We use a tool called Klaviyo.
Spelled?
Klaviyo. For ages, I thought it was pronounced Klaviyo. I actually had to speak to the people in Klaviyo. They're based in Boston. And they actually have a video themselves of how to pronounce their company name. But they're called Klaviyo. So they specify or specifically do email marketing for e-commerce, not for any other industry, just for e-commerce. And because of that, they are experts in it. And the way that they plug into your e-commerce store and they pull all the customer data that's of what they're doing on the store, what products they're viewing, what products they're buying, how much they've spent over time. And with all that data, you can then create segments of your audience to send emails that are specifically tailored to those segments, rather than just blanket sending out an email to everybody on your email list. Here's our new products, because you know a lot of them mightn't care.
Now, I'm not asking you to be a salesman for Klaviyo, but absolute rough. Any idea how much a month you'd have to spend with them to get them to do that kind of work?
So, well, they don't do the work. Again, they're a platform like Shopify.
Ah.
So they're not an agency.
Okay.
Well, this is where we come in as the agency.
You better mention the agency again. Digifly.ie.
So, but we do, we help retailers with all these platforms in how to optimize their presence on all these platforms. But Klaviyo will still charge you. And what they do is they charge you based on how many people are on your email list, how many customers you have on your list, how many people you want to market to. And the more you have on your list, the more they'll charge. So for instance, I think if you have about 10,000 on your list, they will charge you about 400 or maybe 500 a month, which sounds like a lot.
It does.
But if you've got 10,000 people on your email list who are active subscribers and they're engaged with your brand, that 400, 500 a month should be insignificant to the amount of revenue you'd be generating out of email campaigns and using automation as well. Automation is a massive thing now with email in terms of setting up automated flows that figure out are based on triggers depending on what your customers are doing and will send a flow. The typical one that we'd all be probably familiar with is the abandoned cart flow. So you shop some, you put something in the cart, or you go to checkout, you forget about it, the doorbell rings, the baby cries, whatever, and you get an email an hour later going, oh, did you leave this? Have you forgotten about it? Now you might not reply to that email or even look at that email, and then you might typically get another one a day later going, this is still here waiting for you. And then there might even be a third one that says, last chance, do you want 10% off? And that, you know, and they're the types of things, and they're all automated. They're all built into little flows where it figures out where people are and what they've done. And if they've opened that email, if they've gone back and bought off the first email, then we're not going to send them the second two. So it's all very clever automation. And that's just one example, the abandoned cart. There's all sorts of things around post-purchase and welcome series and all sorts of tools and emails and to... The main aim of the game is to build brand awareness and to build your brand in the customer's mind, so that when they think of that product again or another type of product that you sell, they think of you and they don't think of someone else.
We are going to run out of time very, very shortly. So give me just two. Normally I ask for three. Two really clever little things or big things that you've seen in this area.
In terms of customer retention or?
Anything at all to do with e-commerce, you know, don't forget this or don't go down there, don't do this, do that.
From a retailer's point of view or a customer's point of view?
We're talking about Michael and Mary still, because I'm trying to get the world to... Actually, do you know the other thing that we haven't mentioned, and I better mention it now, there is money available. There's your local enterprise office money, and there's Enterprise Ireland money available to get you up and running.
Yeah, and this, well, you know, you mentioned Michael and Mary, and this is probably one of the key ones is, yeah, your local enterprise office. They will, they've a voucher called the online trading voucher, and that will fund up to 50% of a project up to the value of $2,500. So if you had a project, if you wanted to hire somebody like an agency or a freelancer and you were spending $5,000, the voucher would cover half of that, $2,500. Now, it doesn't have to be up to $5,000. You know, if it was a total of $2,000 spend, the voucher would cover $1,000 of it. So it'll basically cover half up to $2,500. And that's pretty much open to anyone. across the country, and your local enterprise offices where to apply for that. The Enterprise Ireland side of things is steps up a level. They've run, I think, three times now throughout the last couple of years, their online retail scheme, and somewhere in the region of 10 to 15 million euros off the top of my head has been granted to retailers across the country.
Now, it's a chunk of change, isn't it?
It is, and that funds up to 40,000 per retailer for projects up to the value of 50,000. So they'll fund 80% of a project. We've brought a couple of clients through that process last year, and Enterprise Ireland awarded them the funding. Now, it's a competitive, the local Enterprise Ireland one, the online trading voucher, is a voucher you simply have to apply for, and if you tick all the boxes, you should get it. The online retail scheme is a competitive call, so there is a competitive process, not everybody gets it, so there's only so much money to go around, but it's open to slightly larger retailers. You need to have at least 10 full-time employees, so that's one of the caveats.
That's your usual EI stipulation, right?
Yeah, it is.
Now, back to the other question that I asked you. Do this and don't do that, or you'll be in the doo-doo.
Yeah, I mean, set up the store. Like, if you are starting from scratch, definitely, set up the website, but you are going to have to think about the marketing side of things. Again, dependent on the product, Google Shopping tends to work very well. But, if you're not familiar with Google, if you're in any way savvy, you can do the research, and there's loads of YouTube videos out there that will walk you through the entire process. In the space of an hour or two, you can actually learn what to do yourself. Or you can hire someone. You can hire an agency, or you can hire a freelancer to do that work for you. But that is the one area that you need to consider, how you're going to get people in the door. Then after that, there are obviously on the on-site stuff is obviously quite important as well in terms of how what they do when they get there, but also once they've left your store, how you then retain those clients, how you build your community, and not just through the email marketing, which we spoke about, but there's other ways and means, utilizing reviews for your services, looking at reward schemes, referral schemes. And one thing I'll say about Shopify is, one of the good aspects of Shopify is that it's supported by an ecosystem of third-party applications. Think of the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. It's a bit like that, where third-party developers will develop apps that you can add on to your Shopify store to give you extra functionality, which will allow you to do all sorts of wonderful things with your store. So there is that side of things. But just don't think about building the store. You need to obviously think about the other aspects.
And be ready to work 24 hours a day, because I find with the podcast is it's forever. We're forever chatting to people on LinkedIn. We find a huge take up, say on a Saturday morning is a very good time to post a podcast, for example. Mm-hmm. People are obviously lying in bed thinking about great things and then say, let's have a click into that great business show. Final question, which is the final question we ask everybody. Who would Patrick McCarthy hire in a heartbeat?
Oh, how many do I get?
Well, you're allowed to have a few, because what you've just given there is almost an hour of a masterclass, and I'm really, really pleased with it.
Well, not at all. It's, hire in a heartbeat. I did have a think about this, and, there's some world-class, even though we're in Shopify and e-commerce, we're also in the kind of the marketing side of things, and there's some world-class marketers out there like Gary Vaynerchuk. Would be one. There's a great marketer in the States called Ezra Firestone. He's a big Shopify marketer. The name alone is amazing.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
But probably a little bit closer to home, somebody like Stephen Bartlett, who was on Dragon's Den in the UK. He's done fantastic things with his businesses. But I think ultimately, from an e-commerce perspective and a Shopify perspective as well, somebody like Ben Francis. So Ben Francis is the guy who started Gymshark in the UK, which is one of the highest grossing Shopify stores out there. It was recently valued at about 1.2 billion euros, and he's still in his 20s.
Does Gymshark sell
apparel, gym apparel. So athletic clothing.
There are pals, Gym Plus Coffee. They're the guys who are probably trying to emulate that.
Well, exactly. I mean, and Gym Plus Coffee are on Shopify as well. They're a fantastic role model for Shopify, and they as an Irish retailer, they're probably one of the doing the best on Shopify as well.
Fantastic. That really is, that was most interesting, Patrick McCarthy. And thank you very much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And hopefully you'll come back, because there, I say there's another couple of hours in you about all of this. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 84. And do please share this podcast with all of your connections on social media. And do it now. We've just been talking about it. Do it now before you forget. Somebody will start pressing that button. Or what did you say? The baby will start crying or something. Yeah. Do it now. A click of a button for you. Commercial success for us. And make it easy on yourselves to enjoy your favorite business podcast. Press the subscribe button now as well. And don't be shy. Tell your pals in business about us too. You've just heard 1 hour about how to be in business in a couple of hours at the cost of 29 euro. Can't go wrong with us. And you can always talk to us on our LinkedIn page. We always have nice chats with people there. Great brands like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, Isme, Virgin Media, Udaras Nukatata, advertise with us, and so should you. And we like being the world's best sounding business podcast, and that's why we work with our great friends here at the Dublin Podcast Studios, including today's sound engineer, Mark McCarthy, no relation. Later on, Peter Rice will add all of those lovely stings we love so much. The Dublin Podcast Studios are open for business as well. And if you want to make a podcast, check the new website and then have a chat with Peter Rice. As always, a great business insight you hear on That Great Business Show are only made possible thanks to our sponsor, the great makers of the world's best shaving oil, De Facto, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conall O'Moran, for Míle Buíochas agus Slán Tamall.